Hey everyone, it's Billy Morrison and Ozzy Osbourne here. Our new show, The Madhouse Chronicles, is dropping this April. Join us as we watch and react to the maddest internet clips. What do we discuss, Ozzy?
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, all that kind of shit.
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, and all that kinds of shit. Visit osbournemediahouse.com for early access. What do you say? Do you think it's the wildest show on the internet?
You're in the madhouse now.
Welcome to the bonus midweek show of The Overwhelmed Brain. If you have been listening a while, then you already know what these are. But if this is your first taste of The Overwhelmed Brain, this is the extra episode that I put in every now and then in the middle of the week because I have just so many darn things to talk about. Not that I am making this stuff up. I get people writing to me all the time asking me questions, and I like to do my best to answer as many as I can. In fact, I've got a couple emails, I think I'll get to both of them today, that I want to share with you. And before we go on, I just want to say that everything I talk about on the show is my personal opinion. Always consult a mental health professional for advice before making any serious life changes. All right, this first message I may not be able to answer fully because I just don't have enough information, but she says, I love your show. You've helped me so much, and I tell all my friends and family about your podcast. Feel free to use my real name. I'm 25. I've gone on about 10 to 12 dates in the past 2.5 years. Every single time I get ghosted or will date for a few weeks and then I'll get ghosted. Just in case somebody's not heard of that term, ghosting is when somebody pretty much disappears. You know, you're getting along great. Maybe you talked to them a couple days ago and now they're not answering texts. They're not returning your calls and they just simply slip out of existence. And you have no idea where they are, and you have no idea why they're not calling you back. You don't know what you did wrong, and you wonder what the heck they're thinking, and they don't share anything. They just disappear. And some people do this because it's easier than facing reality. I'm not making an excuse for them, and I'm not giving them any leniency because I think ghosting is kind of wrong. It's kind of not a good thing to do unless you are being harassed or abused by the person. If they are intimidating, harassing, or just scary to be around, then ghosting is perfectly welcome in my book because that means you're avoiding something that could be very harmful to you. But we don't call that ghosting. We call that no contact when it's like that. In this person's case, she's saying, I get ghosted. You know, this person's disappearing and I've gone on 10 to 12 dates in the past 2.5 years and I just get ghosted. So she goes on to say, I like to think of myself as chill, emotionally intelligent, an old soul for my age. I want to meet a guy who can be my best friend and life partner. I always think back to your episode when you talk about the 10 things to look for at the start of a relationship. And every time I look for those signs and things seem to be going well, and I still get ghosted. What am I doing wrong? I know it's their problem, not mine, but I can't help but think it's me and it's seriously affecting my self-esteem. Okay, so that was Morgan. You said I could use your name. Morgan, thank you so much for writing this. And I feel for you, definitely. First of all, you're at the age where the guys in your age range are, they're not going to be the old soul that you are, maybe. You're going to find them, but they're fewer and farther between. So what I mean is that it's harder to find guys your age that are necessarily as, how can I say this, as mature, as emotionally mature, especially as you are. Now, that doesn't mean they don't exist. They absolutely do exist. It wasn't me at that age. You know, if you're looking in the 22 to 28 range because you're 25, you're going to hit a lot of misses, or you're going to miss a lot of hits or something like that. You're not going to have much of a great selection of people that might fall in the same type of personality that you're looking for. So I'm taking a guess here though. You could be looking for somebody completely opposite of what I'm thinking, but that doesn't necessarily matter. What matters is that, you know, you find someone that you get along with, that you're compatible with, and that's actually going to stick around and not ghost you. But yes, the younger male generation typically has more growing up to do. And I don't mean to be offensive to any younger males listening to this, but If you're a younger male and you're listening to this and you're thinking, what? That's not me. That's not who I am. Then, you know, kudos to you. You're about a generation ahead of me when I was that age. But I was certainly immature at that age. And I don't mean, you know, you're playing with your Matchbox cars or anything like that, although you could be, and I don't have anything against that. I'm saying that immature as far as the emotional spectrum on connecting with people and really understanding and being sympathetic and showing emotional intelligence without getting angry at people for no reason. Or, you know, there's a level of emotional growth that has to take place that sometimes doesn't, especially in men. It's like, it does seem to be a different journey for a lot of men, the emotional intelligence journey, knowing how to connect with the opposite sex or the same sex if they're gay, as far as looking for love, looking for connection, and knowing how to be a good romantic partner. And, you know, that's how I look at things, is that a lot of young people themselves, you know, any young person doesn't have too much experience being an ideal romantic partner. And this is where I'm going to go with you. This isn't going to be a long answer because I don't have enough information. Like, I don't know what you're doing that might turn guys off or something. It may be nothing you're doing that turns them off. It may be a certain dating app that you're using that is used for other things like hookups. And, you know, that's what it's known for, but you're trying to find a long-term boyfriend, or I don't know. I don't know how you're meeting these people. If they're blind dates, I think that might have something to do with it or not. But the first place I go to when it comes to anywhere in the teens and 20s is that because you're young, the selection is going to be much different, especially if you are what you say, an old soul, which tells me that, you know, you have probably a mature perspective of the world. You have a mature perspective of relationships. You know what you're looking for probably in a relationship. And you are dealing with a segment of the population that probably just wants to have fun, just wants to connect, just wants to take it day by day and see what's happening. And if it doesn't work, they'll go to the next person. I don't know. I don't know if that's the case with these guys. And I know you will meet the right guy soon enough. But the good news is you are in your 20s. So this means that as you grow older and as your selection of men changes, because that's typically what happens, we certainly have our preferences in what we look for in a romantic partner. But as you grow older, your taste sometimes changes and what you look for sometimes changes. Like in my youth, all I cared about, and I hate to admit this, all I cared about when it came to a romantic partner, the first thing I looked at when it came to a romantic partner was their body. I'm serious. It's shallow and I hate to admit it, but I was a young guy. My hormones were on fire and I was just in that space. At that time, that's what I wanted. That's what I was looking at. That's what I was focused on. That's what I couldn't get my mind off of. That's why I moved to a beach state, Florida, when I was younger. I wanted to be near those bodies. So I have a feeling there's a large segment of young men out there that's the first thing they see. That's the first thing they look at. And I'm going to say this. I'm going to use this as an excuse. I was hardwired that way. I was hardwired to procreate. I'm the young male on the prowl, even though this sounds very predatory, but I wasn't a predator. I'm going to say a lot of men probably aren't predators, but there is a segment of young men that that's the first thing they see. So the reason I say that is not because that's what you're dealing with, although you will have to deal with that. I'm going to be honest, there will be young men out there that you will have to deal with that. And there will be older men out there that you will have to deal with that too. But some men know how to control it, keep it in check, and not let it be the primary reason to be in a relationship. And there's a lot of men like that too. So the other side of this is that, yes, there are men that see that first. And then there are men that see that first, and it may not be the deciding factor. Because I saw many bodies when I was younger that I was definitely attracted to, but I would not be in a relationship with some of these people because I just did not like their personality. So the reason I'm telling you this is because there are men out there that may not get to the personality part. There are men out there that do want the hookup. And because they're younger, the hormones are raging, you're going to run into that part of the male population. And hopefully who you're meeting are nice guys and are going to keep that in check. So why am I telling you this? It sounds disappointing. It sounds like I'm painting a picture that maybe you should just stay out of the game. That's not it at all. I'm just giving you the hard facts that there are guys like that. And you may be selecting from a pool of guys that are in that type of frame of mind. So if you are, then I want you to be cognizant of where your selection is coming from. Is it all your close friends and all your close friends like to party and like to hook up? I mean, I'm not trying to throw any assumptions or judgments your way, but I just want to have you think about this stuff. Where is the pool of men that you're selecting coming from? Is it on an app, like I said, like a dating app? Because if it is, maybe switching apps and maybe finding one that is more in tune with you might be helpful. So I got that out of the way. I don't know if any of that applies. It may not, but I just wanted to throw that at you because I was 25 once. And when I was 25, I was really 18. I was really a lot younger in maturity. And it took me a while. It's taken me decades. It's taken me a long time to mature. Now, that doesn't mean you can't find a young guy that has a childlike personality but makes adult decisions and wants a long-term relationship. That is absolutely out there. I know it is because some young guys write to me and they sound much more mature than the way I was back then. So there are guys out there that are opposite of the maturity level that I'm talking about now. They are out there. It's just, you know, they're scattered about and you may have to go on date after date after date. And this might be bad news, but you might have to go on date after date until you find the right guy, until there's someone that really stands out and you realize, wow, this person isn't ghosting me. They're paying attention to me. They care about me. They want to see me. There's a lot of compatibility. They're saying the right things. They're doing the right things. They're not being overly aggressive. They're not being overtly like love bombing and gift bombing and things like that. I talk about on my Love and Abuse podcast. They're doing a lot of things that are right in alignment with what I want in a relationship. And if you're anything like my girlfriend before we met, she said I wasn't going to settle. She said, I will not settle and I would rather be single for the rest of my life. That is hard for some people, but she wasn't going to settle. And in this world, when you don't settle, you don't get what you don't want. Do you get what you want? Well, if you don't get what you don't want, then all that's left is what you want. You know, I won't try to put together that puzzle, but that is something I've learned, is that when I decide not to take what I don't want, then what I want is the only thing that's left over and what I end up with. So there's a little bit of spiritual aspect in there. Maybe you could look at it that way, but it's also scientific because it's a process of elimination. So it's a practical way to look at things as well. But yes, you may have to go on a lot more dates if you're looking for someone specific. Now, I'm not going to just leave it there because there's one more thing that I need to say about this. It's that there's a couple things that you said that may be interfering in some way. And that is, you're looking for a life partner and you are an old soul for your age. So this tells me that maybe you are looking for a very long-term relationship and that is coming out while you're dating, especially the first few weeks. I mean, does it have to come out that early? Maybe you're not saying this. Maybe you don't say that at all, but I bet you there are certain things that you do say that maybe come out while you're dating that, I don't know, maybe scares some people off. I swear, I'm not trying to blame this on you or make you the reason people are doing this, because ghosting, I don't believe in it. I think that you should have a talk about it and say, hey, look, we had a great time. I just don't feel the compatibility. or there's something that you said that kind of scares me and I don't want to go in that direction. So I don't really want to see each other again. You know, hopefully they say it nicer than that, but it's so much nicer to have some closure from someone instead of them just disappearing. But I really want to check in with yourself and be aware of what you're talking about, how you say it, and what you're saying, just in case you're saying something to people that might want to live day to day and just enjoy the moment, instead of what they might fear of, what, you want a life partner, and you want kids, and you want to get married, and you want a home in the suburbs? I mean, if you're saying all this stuff, it's great that you can talk about this stuff and just let it all out, because yes, the right person's going to resonate with that and connect with it. But the right person also may want to just live for today and be present with you today, and then go on another date and live for that day and be present for that day, and may not be thinking about the future. I'm not saying that's a good thing. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm just saying that, you know, in your 20s, you're still young. You're still trying to figure out the world. You're still trying to figure out your place in the world. And if I was in my 20s and I was on a date and I was talking to a girl and she said, you know, I really want to get married someday. In fact, the sooner the better. And I'd like to have some kids. The sooner the better. I'm not saying you're saying that, but when I hear that, I'm thinking, whoa, it's a little too fast for me. And why are we talking about this so soon? I thought we were just going to go to the movies. So if that's coming up, if any of this long-term talk is coming up, and then you find that people ghost you, it might be that, you know, I can't say. I don't have enough information about what you're doing, what they're doing. If there's something that happens and suddenly they're gone, you might want to start taking notes, like, okay, the last thing we talked about was this and this, and then they didn't call me anymore. I will say this, if they are more interested in having sex with you, wanting a hookup, and you want to wait, and they say, okay, that's cool, no problem, but then they ghost you, I can pretty much connect the dots, and I hope you can too. And what I mean by that is it does sound like they're after just one thing. And if you're not into that, just that one thing, then what's happening is you're weeding out the people that you don't need in your life. And I think that's a good thing. I don't want you to just give in if somebody wants it and you don't. Weed these people out. And as you do, the people you end up with will be the ones that will respect you and treat you nicely and honor your boundaries and give you the space you need and be interested in you, but not be aggressive or assertive or anything like that. They'll just enjoy your company. So that came to my mind too. And let me just end talking about this email with this comment, which is something that I learned very late in life, which is anytime you go on a date, you don't treat it as a date. You treat it as meeting a friend or trying to be friends, learning about your friend, being interested in your friends, being interested in your friend's history and what their life goals are, and not trying to compare them or synchronize them with your life goals and your journey and what you're going through. And what I mean by that is if you were to meet someone that you would rather have as a friend and they would rather have as a friend than you, how would you act then? And this is the difference between like going to a job interview, wanting the job so badly that you're nervous, or going to a job interview and telling yourself, you know what, this job doesn't matter. I don't even care if I get it. The difference is how you show up, and it changes how authentic you are going to be. And I've tested this. I've gone to job interviews where I told myself, look, I don't care if I get this job. If I get it or not, it doesn't matter. Because I don't want to spend my time trying to impress them. So I'm not going to care if I get it. Sure, I wanted it, but I don't want to be nervous. I don't want to try to impress them. I don't want to say stupid things and say, yes, sir, or yes, ma'am. I'm just going to act like myself. I'm going to go in there and act like myself. And how would I act if I totally didn't care? So if I were dating, that's how I would treat the date. I would treat the date as if I did not care if we were going to be a couple or not. That wouldn't even be on my radar. I mean, it might be, you know, deep down, because I really want a romantic relationship. But if I go into a situation wanting something and hoping it works out, then that energy is going to come out of me. That energy is going to come out in ways that will be picked up by the other person. They may be in a space of, oh, I just wanted to enjoy this date. And you might be in a space of, I hope he really enjoys this date so he asks me out again, because I really want someone as a life partner. Putting that out there, life partner. Maybe you're going to be my life partner. That might scare people off. And it may not even be in the words you say. Maybe in the way you look at them, like, oh my God, this could be the one. Are you the one? And then your face shows that. And I'm not saying you shouldn't do this. I'm just saying if that's what's being picked up, then it could be maybe scaring some people off. Maybe they don't want to think that long term. Maybe they're too young to think about life partner stuff. So this is what I get from your email. And like I said, there's very little information for me to work on here. So I'm really reaching and trying to grab at anything I could get out of this email so that you have something to work with, something practical. You know, maybe what I said today helps. Maybe I'm way off. I'm open to being wrong about everything I just said, because again, I don't have enough information. But I will say this. You did say it's their problem, not mine. And you also followed that up saying that I can't help but think it's me and it's seriously affecting my self-esteem. So if anything I said was true, if anything I said about you giving off that vibe, that energy, that you want something long-term, that this could be the one, that maybe you could be married someday, if any of that's in there, then it is possible they're picking that up. And if you already have a low sense of self-esteem or self-worth going into it, then it's possible they're picking up on that vibe too. So I know that sounds like, again, I'm pointing at you, but you're the only person I can talk to right now. I can't talk to your dates. And if you're going to work on anything, it's to be secure in yourself, knowing that you are a damn catch. I don't care how tall you are, short you are, big you are, small you are, skinny, fat, doesn't matter. I don't care if you're bald or have hair down to your butt. It doesn't matter. I'm just saying all of the above doesn't matter. Because if you know you're a damn catch and you just wear that proudly, you know, you don't let it go to your head, but you just know you're a catch and you got a great personality and you care about people and you're respectful and kind. If you know this about yourself, then that vibe doesn't come out at all. You just carry yourself well. And if somebody ghosts you again, they don't know what they're missing. And you wear that proudly. Like, whoa, they don't know what they're missing. That poor guy. Poor guy's going to miss out on this. So there may be a little bit of ego work to do there. Like if your self-esteem is really being affected, I want you to look up anything where I talk about ego at theoverwhelmedbrain.com. Because the opposite of low self-esteem is a healthy ego. And once you have a healthy ego, your self-esteem will rise. So I want you to listen to those episodes on ego and make sure that you do have a healthy ego, a healthy self-perception, so that when you go into situations, knowing there could be ghosting or rejection or anything like that, and you have to go through it several times, maybe 10 or 12 more times, because you're weeding out the bad to get to the good. Then when something doesn't work out, you can pick yourself back up and keep going, because you know it's not you. And I know this is a process. And I know if it happens 20 more times, you're just going to be down in the dumps. I get it. I get it. I know what that feels like. And when it was happening to me when I was younger, because when I was in my 20s, that was happening to me too. I was getting rejected all the time. And I did take a hit. But then I realized, oh, I'm getting rejected a lot because I'm so desperate. I'm not saying you are, but I felt way desperate back then. And I was giving off that vibe. I was giving off that energy. And I was kind of like a lost puppy looking for an owner. And it wasn't healthy. It wasn't a good way to look for a date or a new friend. In fact, I didn't even treat potential partners as friends. I just treated them as future partners. And I mentioned that earlier. It's like when you treat somebody as a friend, you come off a lot different. And when there's an issue, it's not such a big deal because, hey, they're your friend. And then when you start getting closer, then you start treating your friend a little bit differently. And it turns into something more. Let me give you one last piece of advice. And I said this last time. Fall in love slowly. Don't see all the great stuff in someone on the first date or the fifth date. Just fall in love slowly. Start having feelings very slowly. Because if you're anything like me when I was younger, I fell in love so fast and I kept getting my heart broken and it just felt awful. So it is helpful to just take things slower, and hopefully that will allow you to continue filtering men out that won't fit your criteria. And know that now that you're really dealing with this, now that you're really addressing it, just realize that as you address this in yourself, as you reflect on it, as you realize you're right, it's not me, it's just an incompatibility, or it's just we're not meeting in the same place. Try to experience the moment, try to be present, and just try to connect at the level you're at today. And if the future has in mind for you to be in a relationship, then maybe that'll happen. But know that, yes, at 25, you're looking for the right person, but sometimes it does take a little longer. But the good news is, and I know you don't want to wait, you really have a long time. You really have a long time to find the right person. And it's more fun with somebody else, yes, as long as they're the right person. I don't want you to end up with the wrong person. I want you to end up with the right person. So I don't know if this helps. You may have to write me back and fill me in about exactly what else is going on, but I hope this does help, and send me an update sometime. Thanks for writing, Morgan. I wish you the best, and we'll be right back. There was a time in my, late 20s, I think, when I started developing sciatic nerve pain. It went down the back of my right butt, down to my leg on the side, and almost down to my ankle. And every day, it would hurt. It would just be so much pain. And I couldn't sit right. I had to go to the chiropractor for several years, spent many, many, many thousands of dollars. And each year it got worse and worse. So the chiropractor was helping relieve the pain, but something was going on in my body. And I eventually moved to California. And I remember like a year after I moved to California, I was going up the stairs. And it was at that point I realized that this pain was never going to end. The chiropractor wasn't doing anything for me anymore. And I didn't have a resolution. I just thought, I'm going to have to live with this pain for the rest of my life, and it's going to get worse. The reason I'm telling you this is because our sponsor today is Curable. Curable has an app that was developed by former pain sufferers, physicians, and pain experts that actually helps you expand your life again, physically, mentally, and emotionally. The app guides you through science-based techniques to help you overcome fear of movement, fear of symptoms, and fear of never getting better. I was there. I needed this app. It was something that just didn't exist back then, and now it does. And they have both a free version and, of course, a pay version, but it's worth checking it out, getting the free version, just trying it out. For 15 years, I had chronic pain, and I needed something like this, and to see this come out, and I'm so grateful that they offered to sponsor the show because I really wanted to talk about them. And what they have is the world's largest collection of evidence-based exercises for chronic pain relief. And when you sign up with them, they'll design a unique plan for you. And it's really cool how it works because we're so used to texting nowadays, and their app acts like a text program. And it just asks you questions, and then you reply to the questions. And I'm just sharing this with you because I know there are people that listen to this show that have chronic pain. And maybe you think that there's just no way out. It's never going to end. But there is help, and it's worth giving it a shot and seeing if it's helpful for you. Go to getcurable.com. That's the word get and curable, curable.com/brain. Set up your free account and get started with the free version. And if you decide to upgrade to a subscription, you get 50% off. So it's worth checking it out at getcurable.com/brain. If you're dealing with chronic pain of any sort, then it might be something that changes your life. Check it out today. All right, welcome back. Like I said, I was going to read you another email. In fact, I'm not going to read you an email. I'm going to read you one line from an email because this line stuck out to me so much that I think I need to talk about it again. I've talked about it in the past, but not from this angle. And this line in this email says a lot. I want you to hear it. I'm going to read it. I hate them so much, yet as a spiritual person, I know I need to forgive. I want you to soak that in. What does that mean to you? I hate them so much, yet as a spiritual person, I know I need to forgive. If you've been listening a while, you probably know what I'm going to say about forgiveness, but let me just answer this person without reading any of the rest of the email, because this person is struggling. In that one sentence I can read, she's struggling with being spiritual and hating them. Let me say this, and this might be controversial. It is not spiritual to hate. I know it might be a surprise to some people, or maybe, you know, that sounds like something Paul would say, but it is not spiritual to hate. In fact, I would say it's anti-spiritual if you ever want to be in a place of zen, in a place of peace, to not hate. Now, what do I mean by that? I'm not saying that hate is a great thing and we should all do it. Well, I am sort of saying that only if hate permeates your very being. If hate is in there and you have an internal resistance to hating because you're spiritual, because you're moral, because you're a good person, if any of those exist, if you're a great person otherwise and hating is against your values, then what you might be doing, and in this person's case, I believe she is, what you might be doing is carrying around a conflict and resistance so that you're never able to be who you want to be. And in this person's case, spiritual. She wrote, I hate them so much, yet as a spiritual person, I know I need to forgive. No, you don't. You don't need to forgive. I know that's controversial. I know that's against maybe a lot of spiritual teachings. And you don't have to listen to me. You could shut this off right now saying, what? How dare he say that? Everyone should forgive. Everyone should have the ability to forgive. That's how we move on. My take on forgiveness is no, that's not how we move on. It's not about forgiving someone. It's not about forgiving the other person. My take on forgiveness is always looking at who you were at the time and how you showed up at the time of the event in question. That's one part of this. The other part is, if you don't allow yourself to hate, it will never be released. It will stay in there and it will fester and it will continue to be a conflict inside of you. It will continue to feel like a resistance and that bad feeling inside of you. You will get emotionally triggered by the person in question or the people in question. If you never allow yourself to fully hate, it stays. That doesn't mean you can't forgive for the hate to go away. I'm not saying that at all. If you are the type of person that can really soak in forgiveness and forgive someone else and have no ill will or ill feelings towards someone else, don't listen to me. But if you are the type of person like I've always been, this is how I am, if somebody wronged me or someone I love so badly that I just hate the person, then I need to be allowed to hate that person and curse them in my mind and really want them to be hurt, or maybe my mind will go into a space of wanting them to die. That sounds so awful. That sounds so anti-spiritual, and I know it does. I don't even like saying it because somebody might take it wrong. Somebody might think I'm giving the worst advice ever, and it might be. I'm open to that. But let me say this. If you have hate in you, then you should allow it to come up Really feel it. Allow yourself to hate. Don't stop yourself from hating. Allow it to come to your mind. Allow it to come through you and out of you in a safe place. Maybe not around other people, unless they're safe too and you can express it. But if it comes up and out of you and you just say, I hate that person so much. I hate him. I hate him. I hate him. You might find yourself finally letting go of the hate without the need for forgiveness. Not that you can't forgive after that, but it makes it easier. If you want to forgive after that, you can if you'd like. My story around hate is I didn't realize how much I hated my stepfather my entire life. I didn't realize it until my mid-30s when I was in the peak of depression and I met this girl and we started dating and she noticed how depressed I was and she said, I can't, you know, be around you. You're just really in this bad space and I'm in this other space and I'm happy and you're not. I don't know if I could be around you. And things came to a crash in my mind. I had lost all these relationships and suddenly out of nowhere, I had no idea where it came from. I just started crying and I yelled, I hate my stepfather so much. I hate him. I hate him. It was the first time I'd ever said that out loud. It was the first time I ever thought it. I never even thought about hating him. He was an abusive alcoholic in my family. And fortunately, I didn't take the brunt of the abuse, but unfortunately, my mom did. And my other siblings had to deal with some really bad stuff. And I was scared most of my life living in that house. So I didn't realize how much hatred I developed for him. And it was weird because I also loved him. And it's just a strange feeling because when you bond and you attach and you're with someone for a long time and they show up half the time as a nice, kind person and they seem to love you and the other time they're a monster, you don't know how to deal with it. And so I came out of that family not knowing how to deal with these emotions that I had in me, not even realizing I had hate. And I also had a moral compass that told me, hating is bad. You shouldn't hate anyone. You shouldn't even say that word, hate. I was brought up to believe that hating was bad. So what did I do? I forced it back down. I resisted hating. And when you resist something that's inside of you and you never let it out, it stays in there. It doesn't go away. So in my mid-30s, I discovered that I had hate inside of me. Something that I, quote, wasn't supposed to have. And for the first time, I was able to let it out and cry. And I fell on the floor and, you know, I just was losing it. I was having a little breakdown. And it was one of the most pivotal moments of my life because it was the first time that I had released so much negative energy that I was carrying around. And it was one huge step toward the beginning of getting out of my depression. And when you hold on to such negativity for so long, you could get depressed. You know, I look at depression as the suppression of thought, which leads to the repression of emotion, which leads to depression. So you have a thought and you go, oh, no, I can't have that thought. I can't have hate. I can't have that thought. So I'm going to suppress that. And then you have the emotion around that. Yeah, but I hate. Oh, I just have this feeling and I want to hate him so badly or hate her so badly. But I can't feel that. That's not right. That's immoral. I shouldn't think that. I shouldn't feel that. So you repress those feelings. And then you hold on to them. And as you hold on to them over the days, weeks, months, and years, you stop feeling some things. This is what I'm saying is that if you're a spiritual person, I believe you should experience the entire breadth of the emotional spectrum of what's available. Because whatever you resist persists, but it does so underneath the layers. And it persists down there, creating resistance in your body and causing problems in your life. Like this person wrote, I hate them so much, yet as a spiritual person, I know I need to forgive. I wonder how long you've been holding on to that. This is something that forgiveness fools us into, to thinking that forgiveness is the path to releasing these negative emotions. Now, I do believe that some people can do this. I'm not capable of forgiving someone else first. I first either have to allow the emotions to come up and out of me, and they're expressed, and I can punch a pillow, or I can take a run, which I probably wouldn't do, and I would probably just somehow release it or tell my girlfriend, you know, I just hate them so much, or I'm so angry, to help give those emotions a voice, to help them express themselves, to let them out in some way, because that energy builds up in you. So what do you do with it? If you suppress it and go, whoa, 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 I'm a spiritual person. No, I can't feel that. I can't think that because I'm a spiritual person. I'm not supposed to go there. Then what you're doing is forcing it back down. You are keeping the negative energy in there so that you can't reach a level of enlightenment or heightened spirituality or whatever you're trying to attain, because what's in there doesn't get out. It stays in there. So I was saying that I don't forgive them first. I actually express first. And then the second thing I do is forgive myself. And I know some people are thinking, yeah, but if it's not your fault, why do you need to forgive yourself? You didn't cause your stepfather to do any of that stuff. Yeah, but in every event that happens in your life that you have negative feelings about, there's almost always a sliver or more of self-blame. And this is so important to comprehend and really apply in your life, even if you don't think that you are blaming yourself at all. I didn't think any of this was my fault, you know, my stepfather, the way he treated me. But when I think back on what I could have done differently and how I could have shown up differently, then perhaps there's a little bit of self-blame in there because I should have done something different. I could have shown up in a different way. I could have said something. I was old enough. I was strong enough to stand up to and to protect my mom. I could have done a lot of things that I didn't. So maybe there's some self-blame in there. So what do I need to do? I need to tell myself, look, I forgive you for the way you showed up back then. I forgive you for not being able to think of the right thing to say, not being able to do the thing that maybe you should have done. I forgive you for that because you didn't know any better. How could you have possibly known any better? Because if you knew any better, you would have done better. You would have done something different. So this isn't your fault, Paul, or the person who wrote, or whoever's listening. This isn't your fault. I forgive you. It's okay. You can get past this. I forgive you for how you showed up. I'm going to tell myself this. I forgive myself for how I showed up that day and for the fact that I didn't do things in a certain way, didn't say things that I should have said back then. I forgive myself for not being the person I needed to be, that I know I can be now. I didn't have the tools or the resources back then. I forgive myself. And I might even look at myself in second person, I'm dissociated. And I might say, Paul, I forgive you. It's okay. There was nothing more you could have done because you didn't have the tools and the resources you have now. So you did the best you can with the tools and the resources that you had. And I forgive you. When you can come to that place inside of you and forgive yourself for any hint of self-blame that might be going on in there, that to me is truly what forgiveness is all about. And yes, you can also forgive the other person or people. You can. But I believe you have to get through those two steps first. The emotion has to come up and out of you, and the self-forgiveness has to take place. Even if you don't necessarily feel it, just try it on and see what happens when you say that to yourself. And then number three, if you want, you can forgive that person. But by then, you won't even be mad at them. You won't even hate them. You won't have any negativity toward them at all. If you do the first two steps, the negativity is going to disappear and the forgiveness will be a given. It'll happen automatically. You won't even have to think about it. When I think about my stepfather now, I have no ill feelings, even though I still think he's bad news. I know he is. He's bad news. But I'm not carrying around the burden of hatred toward him. It's gone. So that burden no longer hinders me. It no longer creates a resistance inside my body. And I can walk around more enlightened, whatever that means. I can walk around free, free of that negativity. So that's what I'm telling this person who wrote to me. I hope this helps. And anyone listening, I hope it helps you too. I don't think there's any emotion out there that's necessarily bad or immoral, because why would we have them? Why would we have any emotion like these, like what we're feeling, if they were bad or immoral? Because we're not inherently bad or immoral. We're born an empty vessel, and we experience emotions. I mean, we experience anger and hate when we're kids. How many times have you heard a kid say, "I hate you"? I mean, it's sad. I don't want to hear those words myself, but it's true. I mean, kids want to vent this stuff out. But believe it or not, when they vent it out, when they say these things, it gives them an opportunity to release them so they don't hold on to them. Imagine if you said, "Never say that again. You shouldn't hate anyone." There might be parents out there that say that, and I'm not putting you down for that. I'm just saying, if they aren't allowed to express this stuff, we got to wonder where it goes. We got to wonder what's happening. I think, and I'm saying this from a non-parent point of view, so take it or leave it. I think that you can ask your kid questions like, "Why do you hate me?" Or, "Why do you hate that person? Tell me more of what's going on." Allow the kid to explore this with you, to release the negative energy, because there's a lot going on in there, a lot of emotions that they're experiencing, and they don't know what to do with them, and they want to express them. So maybe somebody who came along and said, "Tell me more about what you're feeling," without any judgment, without saying, "You shouldn't say that, you shouldn't think that," because we don't want them to repress it. We just want them to express it in a safe environment so that they are healthier and they're not holding anything back, and they're not walking around with resistance or feeling bad or negative or anything like that. And I know kids they're still growing and they're still learning, and they might go through this stuff and forget everything that they did in their childhood or not. I'm just kind of throwing this out there just in case it's something that you may want to try out with your kid. So I hope this helps. Thank you so much for joining this special episode of The Overwhelmed Brain, the midweek show. And I'm grateful that you're here. I want to thank the people who wrote. I appreciate you. You are amazing. We'll talk to you again soon.